Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. I got thinking the other day as I was organizing today's show. Isn't it strange how the Canadian government made June National Indigenous History Month and Pride Month at the same time? These are two of the most marginalized groups in the country. Both fight for recognition by mainstream society. Both face bias, scorn, prejudice, and unimaginable barriers. Both have long histories of battling for their hard-won rights. And the government has both groups competing for recognition in a month dedicated to recognizing them. It gets you thinking. Today's show is going to acknowledge these two unique communities in the county. First, there will be an interview with the leader of PFLAG's Northumberland chapter. PFLAG is an organization for members, family, friends, and others who belong to the LGBTQ2 community or support them. The impact of the pandemic has hit this community hard, causing a lot of anxiety, isolation, and hardship. Ashley O'Neill, leader of the local PFLAG chapter, will talk about these challenges and Pride Month 2021 celebrations. Here is my interview with the leader of the Northumberland chapter of PFLAG. I'm so pleased to have with me today Ashley O'Neill, the chapter leader of PFLAG, an organization for family, friends, and others who support the LGBT2 community. Welcome to Consider This.
Hi, thanks for having me.
The pandemic has been identified as being particularly difficult for people of the LGBTQ2 community. What are you seeing locally?
I'm seeing a lot of people that are struggling, because if you already have maybe mental health issues, and a lot of people in the queer community do, myself included, it's just an extra something extra to deal with. The whole pandemic, lives are very different, but especially, again, just kind of relating to the housing issue, not being able to leave situations where you might feel in danger. So because of the stay-at-home orders, people have to stay in living situations that might be really detrimental to their safety or well-being. So again, if you just want to use youth as an example, especially not being in school or being with friends or maybe going to a friend's house or having an outlet where you can be yourself and you can be more queer, especially like in school, I find a lot of youth act a lot differently in school than they might act at home. They just don't have this freedom or liberty to get out and be themselves, and then they might be stuck in their living situations with parents or other family members that might not be so accepting or accommodating to their gender identity or sexuality.
Now, EGEL, one of the leading Canadian organizations representing the community, reported that half or 52% of the queer community faced layoffs or reduced employment during the pandemic, compared to 39% overall in Canadian households. Can you help us understand why this is and why this has occurred during the pandemic?
That's actually a very interesting statistic. I would say that I'm not surprised, because it just, again, just seems that queer people are usually at a disadvantage regarding any kind of, you know, employment, income disparities, support systems, housing. I'm not exactly sure why, because as from a legal standpoint and a human rights standpoint, like, there shouldn't be that disparity at all, because, you know, LGBTQ people shouldn't be targeted specifically in their positions and, you know, be let go or laid off because of their their sexuality or gender identity. So it's really unfortunate. And again, it just puts us at a disadvantage just because it's so much harder for people in the queer community. Like there's, as much as you don't want to, as much as someone might not want to believe that discrimination exists, it really does, again, harder to acquire housing, harder to get sometimes employment. And even though a lot of companies say that they are, you know, supportive of Pride, especially during Pride Month, you know, a lot of companies, especially big companies, change their avatar on Facebook to have like the rainbow flag, and say they're supportive, and they put out a lot of marketing in June to say that they're supportive of the queer community. But I always like to ask them, are they really? Do they have business practices that are indicative of them supporting the queer community? Do they support their queer employees? If one of their employees who identifies as queer is discriminated against, do they take that seriously? Or do they try to brush it under the rug? Or do they end up, you know, eventually, yeah, firing them or laying them off because they don't want to deal with it? It's all part of performative allyship, which I think really runs rampant in June during Pride Month through a lot of companies and whatnot.
What sort of advocacy is going on in regards to this, and what efforts are being made to change that landscape?
I think there's really a push of supporting queer-owned or queer-friendly small businesses and local businesses. That's something that I've been trying to do with PFLAG this month, and I will continue to do is just if companies – obviously, it's of the small business owners if they feel comfortable and do identify as queer and are okay with broadcasting that. I want to see a push in supporting the local queer-owned businesses because it's really important to know what businesses are run by queer people, especially like all the Cobra Queer Collective is another organization that I'm involved with, and we sell queer swag, like rainbow swag and like pride stuff and pretty much anything we can get. And we always make sure that we source it from queer owned businesses.
Are you aware of the Northumberland Central Chamber of Commerce's initiative during this month to have stickers and posters put up in businesses locally that say they are inclusive?
Yes, I was contacted by someone from the Chamber of Commerce actually to write a statement about that, and I was happy to see that this initiative is happening because it was similar to an initiative I tried to start in the downtown Coburg around 2015 by putting rainbow stickers in doorways, because I noticed when I went to Toronto, a lot of businesses did that, and it just made me feel safe when I saw a business that had a rainbow sticker in the doorway. And I think it's a really great initiative for the Chamber of Commerce to do because it's really important, especially in rural communities, that people who live in these communities or maybe visiting these communities know that the businesses that they or businesses and establishments that they frequent are providing a safe space for them.
Have you ever been in a local business or a local place where you have felt unsafe or you have felt threatened? Can you share a story?
I'm just going to take a moment to think about that. Actually, yes, but it wasn't regarding sexuality, interestingly enough. It was, I won't say what the business is, but I was in a retail business, and the comments of the person working at the cash actually became really racist. The person in particular didn't like the type of people that were moving into Coburg now, and they thought Coburg was becoming too urban, and it really, really put a damper on my shopping experience, and it really wasn't something that I wanted to listen to. I was on my lunch break at the time, and when I got back, I was just in a really bad mood. But this was over a year ago, and it made me realize that there's still a lot of work to be done, you know, whether it's queer representation or just coming from an anti-racist or anti-oppressive framework, I would like to see more being done by local small businesses to kind of counteract that, because I don't really want to go into a business if I'm going to hear some really hateful comments.
I'd like to go back to something you've alluded to earlier in our conversation, and that is mental health. Now, recent studies have been done by the University of Toronto have found that the LGBTQ2 community reported poorer mental health and higher substance use before the pandemic. They were also known to have higher suicide rates among this group as well. Now, key concerns were raised in the study as the impact of isolation and the anxiety and the depression and exclusion that has taken place during the pandemic. What has your group done to combat this?
So our group had to make a shift of our meetings from being in person to just providing virtual meetings. And it's been really difficult because I think a main component of helping or assisting those in the queer community, especially with their mental health, and what our organization does is having in-person meetings. It's important to get out there. It's nice to be surrounded by people that are like-minded, or being just present in a space that's non-judgmental. But that being said, I do like the positivity of a virtual meeting in the sense that it's more accessible, because at the same time, for all the people that want to come out and be in person at a meeting, there's lots of people who might not feel comfortable being out and in person and would rather maybe sit behind their computer screen and just be present in a virtual world where you don't have to even, you know, you don't have to use your real name. You don't have to put your camera on. I would never demand that of any type of meeting that I have. I mean, we're all on Zoom calls all the time, and I'm sure there's lots of people that don't like being on camera. I don't really like it, but yeah, so we provide, and we will always provide, mental health services to the best of our abilities. I do have a background in counseling. I've been facilitating the monthly meeting for PFLAG since 2016. It happens on the first Thursday of every month. I just want people to know that there is help out there if they want. They can always contact our Facebook page. I'm always on my phone. If someone just wants one-on-one counseling, that is something that I can do. But it would be, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I would love to see government step up, because I think post-COVID, mental health is going to be like one of the top health priorities. And I actually just saw information today that the Northumberland County counseling services, I might have the name wrong, so I apologize if I do, hasn't gotten more funding. So unfortunately, they'll be closing by the end of July. And that's just another kind of kink in the chain here, because, you know, a service that was providing counseling for many people is not going to exist in about a month. And that's not fair, especially for the individuals who are utilizing those services, because now they're going to have to scramble to find alternatives. So, yeah, I think moving forward, mental health support is going to be of the utmost importance in a post-COVID world.
For people who might not fully appreciate just what some of the challenges that people, queer people face, there have been reports in the news media about the kinds of prejudices that young people face. One in particular was on BBC, where a young person was living at home with a very conservative religious parent who was very hostile towards him. Can you share any anecdotes with us, without breaching privacy, that might illustrate the conditions some queer youth in Northumberland are facing?
Of course. For the last few years that it's been on, I've been asked to facilitate a mental health sharing circle through the Raise Your Voice Youth Conference, which is done through local school boards. And so I will say for that, a lot of youth there do still struggle with their sexual identity or gender identity. And what I've come to find is that a lot of their parents aren't really accepting, and or they really struggle with their home life. And again, there's not too many supports, I believe, for youth, especially LGBTQ youth, because just having a place to go or someone to talk to would be really beneficial for them. Like, I, as much as I dislike, you know, telling students not to come out, that's a personal choice too. Like, you don't have to if you don't feel like it, but if it's especially because your safety, like, they, these students want to be more themselves or want to explore their sexualities or gender identities, and then they're in a space where they don't feel comfortable, that can be really difficult. And my heart goes out to these students, just because, and a lot of them, especially from religious backgrounds and things like that. So it was always hard to hear those stories, but at the same time, a lot of them were so strong and so smart and very well informed. And it does give me hope for the future that there's so many youth that are woke, as they say. And it's just, as much as it's difficult, I have read studies that say, like, you know, whereas me being a teenager in the late 90s and early 2000s, like, teenagers now are just more encompassing of sexualities and gender identity than, like, they were in the 90s. So, like, even though, like, there's a more open space now, which is great, so that's good for positivity, but at the same time, like, home life can be really upsetting. So it's interesting that we're creating positive spaces publicly, but I think we need to work on creating positive spaces privately as well.
Can we talk about Pride Month? It began with the usual items, you know, the flag raisings, the rainbow crosswalks. But what has it been like trying to commemorate this part of our community in the face of the pandemic? What's been different?
Because, again, it's one thing I always liked about Pride was just, like, putting on a lot of events. It was wonderful seeing people coming out and talking to them and dressing up and just having fun. So it's really hard to do that on a virtual level. But at the same time, you know, we can do what we can. And I think it's important to still kind of be present, but yeah, like, it was really hard for me personally to get into the spirit of Pride this month, even though there was a lot of great initiatives going on and a lot of, you know, local municipalities and small businesses, like, I've been taking it on themselves to be supportive of Pride, which is great. But at the same time, again, it started with the painting of the rainbow crosswalk in Coburg, repainting for Pride Month, which was great. But then I was subjected to so many comments on various social media platforms, just, like, blatant homophobia, lots of people saying that they wanted to destroy the rainbow crosswalk, lots of people saying that they were going to do burnouts on it because, I don't know why, it offends them. Like, a rainbow crosswalk is just really pretty to look at. I would like it if all crosswalks were rainbow. It's just, like, nice. Children really enjoy it because rainbows are pretty. Like, it just looks nice. And just seeing all the homophobia in the comments really just made me upset, because, like, every year during Pride we deal with homophobia, but this year it just seemed to be so much more, and so much hatred, and just not, people just not understanding or getting it, and then it just makes me realize, or makes me wonder, like, how much more work do we have to do?
What do you attribute that to?
I'm not sure. So I think what a part is, I think because we are a rural community, and there is a common perception that, like, Pride, or I'll say, quote, gayness, is something that's celebrated more in urban centers like Toronto or Montreal. You know, gay people don't exist around here, which is not true. Because I feel that representation and visibility of the queer community in rural communities like ours is really important, and it would be wonderful for me to see if this message of recognition and acceptance would be spread throughout Northumberland County, because that's kind of the first step, is visibility in kind of as a component of community education. Like, it's important for everyone kind of throughout Northumberland County to know that, like, queer people do exist and live in these communities. We support the local economy, whether it's because we have a business or we are consumers of specific businesses. People, like, do buy houses here, especially. There is a lot of new people coming to the community, and it's just really important to know that, like, queer people kind of exist everywhere, and that being blatantly homophobic is not okay. And I guess maybe we're just going to have to spread messages about why it's not, like, creating just an atmosphere of hatred is not acceptable, especially during Pride Month.
The town of Brighton is looking at creating a rainbow sidewalk. What's your reaction to that news?
I think that is a good step. Again, I'm really a big proponent of visibility in communities, and I'm sure Brighton, there's could be some residents there that might not like it or appreciate it. I also see a lot of rhetoric around people thinking it being a huge waste of taxpayer money, but I don't understand. Maybe they don't, like, I don't think it doesn't cost, like, tens of thousands of dollars to paint a rainbow crosswalk. So it's unfortunate that people kind of always go to the negative when they can't see the positive, because there could be a few people in Brighton that will see that, and then they'll feel much better about themselves and just happy to know that they live in a very, like, a quite a smaller community, but there's representation there for them. And that's really what it is. The representation is important for people just to feel acceptance, and maybe then they can be more open if they felt like they couldn't be open before.
Our local MP for Northumberland Peterborough South, Philip Lawrence, introduced a petition into the House of Commons recently from a local pastor asking to exempt religious leaders and similar organizations from a bill that would ban conversion therapy. And conversion therapy is an attempt to convert someone who is gay into being a heterosexual. What was your reaction to this news?
I was appalled. I found out about it recently. I'm really upset. I won't say that I'm surprised, knowing his background, just with religious affiliations and whatnot. But it's the rhetoric around this bill for conversion therapy is a lot of organizations, especially religious affiliated ones, are sharing a lot of information that is not true. One thing I saw was that they're trying to say that with this bill that they're going to make private conversations that parents have with their children illegal, which makes no sense, because there's no way that can even happen unless every single place in Canada was, like, bugged and so they could actually read, like, hear your conversations. But conversion therapy in and of itself is abusive and really detrimental, and there's so many horror stories about it, and a lot of the times it does turn violent and abusive towards the individual who's in conversion therapy. And I would like to see the criminal code change to include conversion therapy, and I do not believe that there should be religious exemptions from it because it is abusive towards LGBTQ people.
But how do you balance the person's religious freedoms with your rights as a queer individual?
I respect a person's right to be religious, but when it infringes on the rights of queer people who might not even have a choice, if these are youth, they don't really have a choice whether they can attend this or not, because it's something that their parents want. It might not be something that they want. So I really think it really comes down to the individual who is in the therapy. And it just really makes me upset, because this has been a talking point within the queer community for numerous, like, for many, many years, because it's been happening pretty much forever. And it's just really upsetting. I wish like, I don't understand why it's so important to make someone something that they're not.
What's next for PFLAG?
What's next for PFLAG is I am really excited and looking into starting a youth group, because I feel that that's a big need in the community. So I'm going to be posting things in the next few weeks in which I would like input from the community, specifically youth, but also from parents as well, just to kind of get a feel for what is needed. But I'm thinking of running on top of our monthly like meeting anyway, which is inclusive of everybody in all ages. But I think what I've been hearing recently is people are looking specifically for youth groups. I would like to start that. And continuing with our meetings, I think once we can meet in person again, that will be great, because another big component of meeting in person is because, again, LGBTQ people are so disadvantaged, whether economically or with housing. We like to provide food at our meetings for people. We like to provide other kind of things. We have something called the Hassle-Free Box, which has it has food in it. It might have gift cards in it. It will have toiletries, like it has menstrual products, condoms, pregnancy tests, anything that might be difficult for people to acquire who might be financially disadvantaged. We have it for people, which, again, we haven't been able to do because of COVID, but we like to just provide things that might be difficult to come by. But again, though, as much as I would like in-person meetings, I'm going to continue probably doing virtual meetings as well, just because of the accessibility component of that, because it is important to provide services kind of in all facets, just to make sure that everyone can access the resources who are able to do that.
Ashley O'Neill, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much.
That was Ashley O'Neill, leader of the Northumberland chapter of PFLAG. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.